On April 17, 1984, St. James's Square in London became the focal point of an international crisis. The crisis began with a small demonstration outside of the Libyan embassy. About 70 people had assembled to protest the regime of the Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi. The day before, Gaddafi had publicly executed two students in Libya for dissenting to his regime. As the demonstrations in London unfolded, Gaddafi ordered an official inside the embassy to open fire on the protesters. The shooter killed a police officer and wounded 11 others. In response, British forces surrounded the embassy for 10 days, preventing anyone inside from leaving. Then, on the 11th day, the British government allowed all 22 officials inside the embassy to return to Tripoli, the capital of Libya. They did not detain, charge, or interrogate a single official. According to British Home Secretary Leon Britton, the Libyan suspects walked free due to the protection of a concept which dates back to at least 2000 BCE, diplomatic immunity. Diplomatic immunity has become both essential for international diplomacy and controversial for its sweeping protections. I'm Alex Doe, and this is Diplomatic Immunity Explained.
Diplomatic immunity is designed to allow diplomats to carry out their functions in foreign countries without the threat of arbitrary arrest on what might be trumped-up charges.
For diplomats posted in foreign countries to do their jobs effectively, they need to be shielded from laws that may be far different from the laws in their own countries.
Diplomats here can conduct themselves and basically carry on without being stopped, without being harassed, essentially.
But as with the Cobra Gate case, applying immunity can be problematic. Questions of who gets immunity, how diplomats are treated, and why justice can seem elusive for victims can lead to international tensions.
The practice of guaranteeing such immunity can be traced back as far as 3000 BC, and is even referenced in ancient poetry from India.
The international laws defining diplomatic immunity come from the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations. Signed in 1961, the Vienna Convention guarantees diplomats special status in foreign states. For example, host countries cannot arrest or detain diplomats, prosecute them for criminal actions, or even check their bags. Ideally, these provisions guarantee the safety of diplomats as they carry out their functions far from home. While the extent of the protections has come into question, diplomatic immunity's endurance through the millennia exemplifies its importance. The current legal formulations of diplomatic immunity represent only a fraction of the concept's history. In fact, scholars have discovered early examples of diplomatic immunity in ancient Indian epics. The story called Ramayana, written sometime between 3000 and 2000 BCE, includes tales in which messengers and diplomats are immune from capital punishment. In one tale, the demon king, Ravana, orders the execution of a diplomat. His younger brother, however, points out that diplomats should never be killed in accordance with ancient practices. Similarly, protective treatment of diplomats existed among the ancient Greeks, Romans, and under the Prophet Muhammad. The rights of a diplomat often extended beyond the prohibition of physical violence. During the Arab-Byzantine Wars from the 7th to the 11th century, the norms of diplomatic exchange expanded. Envoys received not only safe passage, but were exempted from taxation unless they engaged in trade. The severe penalties for violating this early form of diplomatic immunity helped reinforce those norms.
Genghis Khan then sent three ambassadors to the Shah himself to demand the merchants be set free. Muhammad refused. The merchants, along with one of the ambassadors, were executed. The rules of hospitality, which Genghis Khan considered sacred, were broken, and he started planning his retribution.
Genghis Khan and the Mongols notoriously took extreme vengeance on states which mistreated their diplomats. In the 12th century, the Mongols sent envoys to the city of Atrar in the Khwarezmian Empire. The Mongols had, until this point, maintained friendly relations with the Khwarezmians. Their friendly relations would not last. After the Khwarezmian Empire massacred the envoys of the Mongols, Genghis Khan declared war. He destroyed the entire empire in just 2 years. It is tempting to think of diplomatic immunity as an example of modern liberalism, but the safety of envoys in the past also seemed to depend heavily on the realist threat of military retaliation. In modern times, the development of diplomatic immunity has largely paralleled the development of international relations. European diplomats demanded and received diplomatic immunity within Europe in the 17th century. The Congress of Vienna then codified a very basic set of rights for diplomats in 1815. Remarkably, throughout the First and Second World Wars, the rights of diplomats were largely upheld. It was not until 1961 that the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations expanded international law to include the full legal protection of diplomats known today. Within 3 years, the convention had 22 ratifications. Today, all UN member states, excepting South Sudan, Palau, and the Solomon Islands, have ratified the convention. Clearly, diplomatic immunity has become a nearly universal necessity. Yet, some scholars have argued for a reduction in the sweeping scale of its protections.
Well now, Scotland Yard has announced that it's planning on sending a team of detectives to try and track down the Libyan embassy official who is suspected of being involved in the murder of WPC Yvonne Fletcher, who was killed back in 1984 at the Libyan embassy siege in London.
After the shooting from the Libyan embassy, diplomatic immunity prevented London police from raiding the embassy in search of the shooter. Libyan Prime Minister Muammar Gaddafi insisted on the return of all Libyan officials to Tripoli, which is exactly what happened. In 1999, 15 years after the shooting, the Libyan government finally admitted to orchestrating the attack. Nobody was ever held accountable. Unfortunately, less dramatic versions of abuses of diplomatic immunity occur fairly often.
Coming up, we're going to show you how some of the people who are chosen to represent their countries here in Canada treat their staff, and why some are being accused of human trafficking.
In June 2017, a Saudi Arabian citizen killed a German man when he opened his car door directly into the cyclist's path. In Germany, such a case of negligent manslaughter would have otherwise been prosecuted, but the man in question was a Saudi diplomat. He was able to claim diplomatic immunity and left the country without being charged.
In view of the seriousness of the situation surrounding the disappearance of Mr. Khashoggi, the High Commissioner believes the inviolability or immunity of the relevant premises and officials bestowed by treaties such as the 1963 Vienna Convention on Consular Relations should be waived immediately.
Some attempts have been made to both protect diplomats and scale back the instances of abuse. In the wake of the shooting from the Libyan embassy, the government of the United Kingdom offered a memo called Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges. The memo rejected the option of amending the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations. It called an amendment to diplomatic immunity, quote, an impractical solution. Instead, the memo called for the Foreign Office to more thoroughly vet the staff of foreign missions. Most scholars recognize that diplomats cannot undertake their missions while living under constant threat of persecution. For that reason, preventing the arrest or detention of diplomats should err on the side of caution. It allows diplomats to perform their functions freely, and usually they do not abuse their privileges.
It means that the local authorities can't bring pressure upon me, they can't raid my house, they can't raid the embassy offices, and they can't interfere with communications. They can't interfere with diplomatic bags and other forms of communication as well. That is the purpose of it. It's not to prevent people from being dealt with by the local criminal law. That is an incidental side effect of it. And to throw out the whole arrangement because a very small number of people, and frankly, 14 serious crimes out of 21,500 people is not very much. To throw out the whole arrangement because of that would, I think, be a great mistake.
With that being said, some scholars are skeptical of the incredibly broad protections afforded to diplomats against arrest or detention for any crime. In the Brooklyn Journal of International Law, Veronica McGinnis argues that countries should begin entering bilateral agreements to reduce diplomatic immunity. These agreements would replace diplomatic immunity with functional immunity. Unlike diplomatic immunity, functional immunity pertains only to actions relevant to diplomacy. In other words, shooting someone from inside your country's embassy or hitting someone with your car would no longer be protected. Since these are bilateral agreements, functional immunity would apply to the diplomats of both signatory countries. Governments could also continue to uphold full diplomatic immunity in countries which they do not trust to treat their diplomats fairly. Only the countries they trust to protect their diplomats would enter functional immunity agreements. The argument against functional immunity goes like this. Two countries sign a functional immunity agreement. Then, unfortunately, one country goes downhill politically. Suddenly, the other country has to either withdraw all diplomats or risk their safety under the partial protections of functional immunity. In this scenario, a single fabricated accusation by the now authoritarian administration could result in the arrest, conviction, and punishment of a pesky diplomat. The question therefore remains, should diplomats charged with non-duty-related crimes be excused due to diplomatic immunity? One side of the argument risks exposing their diplomats to targeted, unfair attacks for political gain. The other risks allowing criminals to walk free, no matter how terrible their crime. This may be a case where no right answer exists. For more information on the history and debates of diplomatic immunity, check out the following books and articles. Pure Gems of Ramayanam by Krishnan Aravamudan, The History of Diplomatic Immunity by Linda and Marcia Frey, and Limiting Diplomatic Immunity, Lessons Learned from the 1946 Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of the United Nations. Thank you for listening.